Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. The macroeconomic words of the day today are status and quo. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. Monday, today, the 22nd of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Status quo, yes, but with a bit of a twist. President Biden made the speculation official today. Jay Powell is going to keep his job running the Federal Reserve. And Lael Brainard, who currently sits on the Board of Governors and who'd been the subject of much of that speculation as a possible Powell replacement, will be made vice chair. There has been some politicking, both for and against each of them. So we sent Marketplace's Sabri Benishore off this morning and asking him to talk to people about how today's news might change the way the Fed handles this economy.
Brainard, a Democrat and an Obama appointee, and Powell, a Republican appointed to be Fed chair by Trump, are pretty much on the same page when it comes to monetary policy, how to control inflation, how to keep people employed, what to do with interest rates.
The main difference has been on regulatory policy.
Harvey Rosenblum is a former vice president of the Dallas Fed and now a professor at Southern Methodist University.
Governor Brainard has dissented several times from moves to soften some of the Dodd-Frank regulations.
Brainard has disagreed with other Fed officials on, for example, relaxing supervision of smaller banks. There is a specific job open at the Fed devoted to bank supervision. It's called the Vice Chair for Supervision, and Brainard was not nominated for it. Peter Conte Brown is Associate Professor of Financial Regulation at Wharton, and he says that means the Fed's approach to regulation moving forward is still unclear.
Something President Biden did not do today was settle that controversy once and for all by identifying his nominee for that essential role, the vice chair for supervision.
Whoever gets that job, Chair Powell has said he would defer to them on questions of regulating Wall Street. When it comes to climate change, Brainard and Powell have both stood behind efforts to get banks to think about climate change risks. Adam Posen, president of the Peterson Institute for International Economics, says major moves there will need more than new appointments.
Because ultimately, you need legislation and regulation out of Congress to move the needle on decarbonization.
Brainard's nomination to be number two at the Fed would give her wide latitude to shape the research the Fed does. Today, Biden said other nominations will bring new perspectives and diversity. Those nominations, experts say, will significantly shape the Fed's approach to regulation, climate, and even digital currency. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Two random but germane historical tidbits to today's news. On September 11th, 2001, then-Fed Chair Alan Greenspan was out of the country. It was then-Vice Chair Roger Ferguson who kept the financial system going that day. Also, the first and so far only vice chair to get the top job at the Fed. You might have heard of her, only now we call her Madam Secretary. Janet Yellen, huh? On Wall Street today, nice little Powell-Brainard bump in equities. Bond yields up as well. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Should you find yourself on Thanksgiving Day in need of basically anything you might ordinarily pop over to Target for? Well, you're out of luck. In luck are the people who used to have to go to work at Target on Thanksgiving Day because the store was open. Company said today that from now on, they are going to be closed on the fourth Thursday in November. Marketplace's Justin Ho explains what's going on there.
Staffing a store on a holiday can be expensive even in normal times. And this labor market is anything but normal, says labor economist Teresa Ghilarducci at the New School.
You know, the pay for retail workers, for workers in food service, are going up faster than inflation and faster than the national average.
That's because many retailers are having trouble hiring workers in the first place. Analyst Brian Yarbrough at Edward Jones says employers are worried about losing the employees they already have.
So I think a lot of retailers are doing everything they can to make sure their employees are happy.
Business owners are well aware that employees have plenty of opportunities to move into new jobs.
I don't think that we've seen a whole lot of that.
Randy George is co-owner of Red Hen Baking Company in Vermont.
But it's certainly on my mind.
For the first time in 22 years, George is giving his bakers the day off on Thanksgiving and Christmas. He says he knows that work has been stressful over the past couple years.
We are in a really labor-intensive business, and we absolutely depend on everyone being here. You know, it's also not the type of job where you can say, oh, you know, I'll take today off and make it up next week or something like that.
George says he takes pride in being able to deliver fresh bread 7 days a week, year-round. But this year, he says he can afford to give up a few days of sales. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
We all know the stresses of this pandemic, first of all, are real, but that they've also brought new awareness to how serious depression and anxiety can be. And it's a global problem. The World Health Organization says there are about 100 million people in China suffering mental health problems. The problem is that for every 100,000 people there, there are two psychologists or psychiatrists to help them out. In the United States, just for comparison, there are 42 per 100,000. And that, as Marketplace's Jennifer Pack reports now from Shanghai, is a business opportunity.
China has a social media app called Tianwei, meaning sweet taste. It's billed as a safe space for women to chat with men, which kind of sounds like a dating app, but then there's this function called Little Angels, where you can order a chat with a professional listener by the hour. Here's a promo ad.
Hello. You can talk to me about any subject.
Like what?
Whatever you feel like chatting about, I'll be here.
If users, mostly women, are happy with the chat, they can buy a virtual gift and reward the, quote, little angel. So dating and love is possible, but not the point of the app, says founder Yang Yihan.
In China, the need for online companionship, which is to say, finding a stranger to chat with, is greater than the desire to date or find a boyfriend or girlfriend.
In the first 6 months after launching last year, the app reportedly had close to 1 million users, among them college student Winnie Sun.
Sometimes, after a long day of study, I feel tired and confused and want to get some support from the outside. Because, to be frank, women in China are raised to be obedient and likable. In the process, we don't think about what we want to do or who we want to be.
So far this month, she's spent over $300 on the Little Angel service. She likes that she can get a guy to listen whenever she wants, which is kind of a role reversal for her, coming from northern China.
Some places in the north and in other parts of China, women are still not allowed to dine at the same table with men, and women must keep having babies until they produce a boy as an heir. Of course, the younger generation is pushing back.
Sun, like millions of others, was born under the one-child policy, sometimes considered to be the luckiest ones, economically speaking. But the one-child generation has other problems, says Tang Yinghong, a lecturer of social psychology at Leshan Normal University in China's Sichuan province.
The generation born in the 1980s and 90s grew up without siblings. They received too much attention from their families. Their ability to control their emotions, socialization skills, and their sense of belonging are all problematic.
He thinks there's a huge need for therapy in China, with the economy developing so fast. But there is a severe shortage of psychologists. Tai Yuping is among the first certified counselors in China. She says it's not a well-paid gig because people are reluctant to seek help.
People feel ashamed, and there's a stigma. If someone is schizophrenic, they're just called crazy people.
She says China's government has started to pay more attention to mental health since 2008. That's when an earthquake struck Sichuan. Officials called for volunteers to counsel survivors, but with Chinese characteristics. Again, social psychologist Tang Yinghong.
I signed up to give counseling, but soon I found it was immoral to do the job. It was immoral because my order at the time was to calm down earthquake survivors and make them give up their demands to the government.
Demands like from parents who lost their only child and wondered, why did so many schools collapse when nearby buildings didn't? Tang Yinghong says he left that gig after 2 days. Back on the Tianwei Companionship app, a user sings in a virtual karaoke session. The app is expanding its services like providing artificial intelligence boyfriends. Again, company boss Yang Yihan.
Therapy is expensive for our users, and most of them don't think they have psychological problems. They just feel a bit down and want someone to listen to them.
And her services are more than affordable, she says. One of the app's marketing slogans is online companionship for the price of a bubble tea. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Coming up.
You're like, oh, well, if you're doing it, like, I can do it too. And I feel like it's more of an inspirational thing.
All right. I'm good with that. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials gained 17 points today, less than a 10%, 35,619. NASDAQ down 202 points, about 1.25%, 15,854. S&P 500 gave up 15 points, about 0.3%, 46.82. Yes, I know I said they got a nice little bump from Jay Powell and Lael Brainard. Didn't last, though, is the thing. Almost 453 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine. That's how much the CDC reports have been administered in the United States up to today. The number's still going up by about a million or so a day. It does, however, count about 36 million booster doses. The number of people who've been fully vaccinated increasing by about 500,000 people a day. Perhaps related, shares in Moderna picked up 0.7% today. Bonds down, yield on the 10-year T-note 1.62%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Come Wednesday, first of all, there's going to be a whole lot of economic data to digest ahead of the holiday. Also, though, quarterly earnings from Deere and Company. That would be, of course, John Deere, the company that makes the tractors and the combines and all of that, and which also just settled a month-long strike with the United Auto Workers Union, one that ended with Deere workers having done pretty well for themselves, actually. Marketplace's Caroline Champlin is on the farm economy desk today.
The Deere UAW workers approved an immediate 10% raise. But does increasing workers' pay mean tractors will also cost 10% more?
No.
Ann Deignan, a machinery analyst for J.P. Morgan, says based on her calculations, Deere would only need to raise prices by around 1.5% to offset labor costs. Still, not a welcome prospect for farmers.
I have heard farmers describe Deere as the new Apple, where, you know, prices continue to rise, but you've nowhere to go, so you have to keep buying the product.
Ann Deignan says equipment is only one of many costs farmers are having to pay attention to. With that in mind, Deere is under pressure to create higher tech products that save farmers money in other ways, says Kristen Owen, an analyst with Oppenheimer.
So if you think about spraying for fertilizer, spraying for crop protection, how to get a more precise spray and more prescriptive spray, it saves farmers money and it's better for their soil, better for soil health, better for crop health.
The deer strike and its new contract will have implications for the agriculture industry generally, and farmers will take the long view, says UC Davis economist Daniel Sumner.
But another big part of it is that this kind of contract is going to be built into other things, and I'm going to see it throughout what I buy, not just deer.
That could mean costs for trucking or processing plants. Sumner says deer will inspire those other workers to push for higher pay. I'm Caroline Champlin for Marketplace.
A whole lot of people in this economy don't really think they're going to get back to working in an office again, certainly not 5 days a week. But there are some jobs that just can't be done not in person, and so going back can bring with it a whole lot of extra worry.
My name is Sid. I live in Colorado, and I work in the film and theater industries. Right now, I'm working as a stagehand at the University of Colorado Boulder at Mackey Auditorium. So at the auditorium, we get all kinds of different shows throughout a season. The big show for us in the fall, we have the University Opera. And then in November, we have the Nutcracker. So it will be a nice paycheck, but it's going to be very intense. When I got word that we were going to reopen in the fall, my initial response was a bit excited. But then, as Delta started raging harder, and it added this layer of anxiety of, my job involves being around other people. And I'm really worried about potentially having a breakthrough infection, even though I'm fully vaccinated, because my girlfriend's immunocompromised, and I'm not sure how infectious I might be, and I really can't afford to give anybody I love the virus. It's just too scary. These days, I'm in this kind of interim space between being hopeful and being pessimistic. I really want to be hopeful because cases here look like they're kind of plateauing. And so I'm hoping we're not going to have another dark winter like last year. At the same time, I'm also not exactly holding my breath because this virus has been so unpredictable. It just feels dangerous to hope too much because that's where I was at in May and then Delta came along.
Sid's story came to us courtesy of our podcast, Make Me Smart. There are, says the U.S. Department of Agriculture, about 2.6 million people, give or take, who work directly on farms in this economy. Of that number, just 1% is black. Ashanti Williams and Arian Rivera run a group called the Blackyard Farm Collective near Albany, New York, trying to get other people of color into farming by sharing their own stories of how they got into it. So we got them on the phone. Ashanti Williams, Arian Rivera, welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Ashanti, describe for me the farmland that you work.
The farmland that I work right now is, I guess we're in like a mountainesque region. We're about 3 hours out of the city. It's pretty heavy clay soil, and it's a pretty rich pasture land.
And Arian, when I say work the land, I don't know that I'm using the same definition as you who actually works the land would use. So what does it mean to you when you're out there working on a farm?
I mean, I think ultimately we're stewards of this very productive, abundant earth. Seeds grow when you put them in the ground. But a lot of what we're doing is trying to use sustainable and regenerative practices to create more resilient ecosystems. Good soil, clean water, clean air, and healthy food.
Something like 1% of all the farmers in America, Ashanti, are black. And mm-hmm. I wonder how that affects what you're trying to do with Blackyard Farm Collective.
Well, that was a significant part of my journey, making the transition into rural farming. Most of the spaces that I've farmed in have been predominantly white. So it was a lot of a culture shock, and it was really hard for me personally to try to learn about agriculture on that scale and these spaces. So part of the work that we're trying to do here is create those rural spaces, but that are inclusive of that very small 1% and beyond of black people and people of color who are trying to get into farming.
Tell me about getting people of color interested in farming, Ashanti, because, you know, you're one of a very small number. And I guess, do people look at you and go, oh, it's too hard for me?
I think it's actually the opposite. Like a lot of people from the community, a lot of people from the community that I come from, when they see what I'm doing, they're like, oh, well, if you're doing it, like I can do it too. And I feel like it's more of an inspirational thing.
Huh, that's cool. Ariane, who are your customers?
Right now it's still developing, but we've been working with some restaurants down in the city. We have connections in Harlem and the Bronx, people from the communities that we come from who want to buy our animals and our vegetables. And then we're starting to make inroads up here in the capital region. So we're looking to do markets in Albany and Schenectady in 2022.
What kind of luck are you having? And we should say, by the way, you guys are up near Albany, just a little bit upstate. But what kind of luck are you having in, you know, in business development, I guess, is what that's called.
We're doing pretty well. I mean, there's a ton of interest in what we're doing, and everything that we've grown and raised, we've been able to sell so far. So I think our biggest limitation is that there's just two of us, and this is our first year here on the land. But people have been really receptive to what we're doing.
I imagine the first year is going to be the toughest year. I don't know what you guys are going to be doing in 5 years, but I'm sure you're going to look back at this and say this was a rough year, right, Ashanti?
I think so. But I think it's worth it. I think it helps build resilience, and we're very much interested in being resilient. So.
Yeah. Well, so look, let's talk about 5 years from now, right? And Ariane, what do you want this collective to be? What do you want it to stand for?
I'd like us to grow and to have welcomed additional members to our group. I think I want it to stand for visibility for black folks growing food for their communities. Black farmers have existed in this country from before this country was a country. And so we're trying to reclaim that legacy and just provide a visible model for other folks who are interested, looking to potentially do something like what we're doing, or just get exposure to how they can also grow their food and be a part of the food system.
Do you two actually live on the land? Do you live on the farm?
We do. Yep.
We do.
Do you ever just want to get away from it for a little while? I imagine it's all consuming.
Definitely. and because we have animals, it does become a full-time year-round job that there aren't breaks from. But we have been lucky. We've been able to get a farm sitter, and we're looking to find some more people who will be able to watch over things if we go away for a weekend.
And I think that's like the long-term overall plan. Like, it'd be ideal to have more people and be able to, yeah, have a community doing the same work and being able to trade off.
Right, right. Because it's tough. It's got to be. It's all the time. I mean, farming's tough to begin with, and when you're just starting out, it's got to be brutal.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, it's very challenging. I think something, though, Kai, is reimagining what farming can look like. It doesn't have to be one person or a nuclear family farming in isolation and dealing with all these struggles. Like, farming has always been a community endeavor. And so being able to surround yourself with other people makes more resilient food system, more resilient farmers. So as we see the job landscape change, I'm hoping more people just end up hanging out on and around farms.
Doesn't sound so bad. Ashanti Williams and Ariane Rivera, they're the co-founders of Blackyard Farm Collective up near Albany, New York. Thanks, you two. I really appreciate your time and your insights. Good luck on this one.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you.
This final note on the way out today, in which the omens, honestly, are just too big to ignore. So we have told you, right, that El Salvador has made Bitcoin legal tender. They're really leaning into crypto, so fine, they get to decide. But now there's this. The country apparently is going to build a Bitcoin city to feature, said President Nayib Bukele, residential areas, commercial areas, services, museums, entertainment, bars, restaurants, airport, port, rail, everything devoted to Bitcoin. That's a quote from him. And so far, so good. But they're building the thing at the foot of a volcano. The what could possibly go wrong tag writes itself here. I will tell you, by the way, Bitcoin down 6% today. So there's that. All right, we got to go. But here is your moment of economic context real quick on oil. West Texas Intermediate, the U.S. benchmark, down as low as $74.76 a barrel today, the lowest level since way back on October the 1st. For the month, though, West Texas Intermediate down 8%. So, you know, maybe relief at the pump, maybe not. Who knows? Our daily production team includes Anais Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Minju Park. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.